Remakers Mark Episode 11, Back to the Future. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Remakers Mark. This is part 2 of Episode 11, where we are again discussing Back to the Future. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks. Andy, how are you doing? And what was your first car?
I am very well, thank you. And my first car was a 1983 Toyota Tercel hatchback with a hole in the front passenger floorboard and the rear hatch of the car. And you could also take the keys out of the ignition and the car would still run.
Nice.
So kind of a pillar of safety then in all regards.
It was a great, I miss nice. That car. I miss that car every day.
That's great. Pretty peppy though, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. All four cylinders. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Oh yeah. Almost got up hills. Jeremy Nilsson, how are you? And what was your first car?
I'm doing well. And my first car was a 1979 Chrysler LeBaron convertible.
Wow.
Wow. Nice.
Yep. I used to accidentally, because I was not very thoughtful, leave the top down and then it would rain. So it smelled like a basement most of the time.
I think that's just pretty much the de facto state for LeBaron convertibles in general, but I'm sure that didn't help things at all. Lee Hopscotch, how are you and what was your first car?
I'm good. And the first car I purchased was an 86 Chevy Cavalier from someone in St. Paul. And it was actually a really good car for me. It got me through pretty much all of college.
Wow, nice.
Ton of miles on it.
Nice, the old Cavalier, right yep. on.
I hit my first deer with it, too.
That's always a momentous occasion.
My second car was an 87 Cavalier.
Nice.
Nice. And Lee, we're going to go a little meta here, just because we have never actually said your last name. Lee, what is your last name?
It's... Or if we were in Germany, it'd be...
All right. That's great, Lee. Thanks. And my name is Kyle Delahunt. I'll be your host here tonight. And my first car was a 1986 Ford Escort hatchback. By the time I got rid of it, it was nicknamed Old Smokey by the family that we eventually gave it to as kind of a trainer car. So it was it treated me very well. But man, every once in a while, you'd step on the accelerator and it would very nearly go, but it wouldn't go very well, which made for some exciting highway crossings, let me tell you. So, we are again here talking about Back to the Future, but before we do so, we want to thank our friends at Tipsy Pixels for their promotional consideration.
Tipsy Pixels is a monthly retro video game contest hosted by Nell's Lens of Huge Theater. It features drink specials from Tallgrass Brewing, and players can win prizes from Level Up Games, as well as free drinks and tickets to shows. The next event is September 15th at Triple Rock Social Club in Minneapolis, playing Twisted Metal 2. To find out more about Tipsy Pixels, head to tipsypixels.com or follow them on Twitter at tipsypixels.
All right. Thanks again to them. Now we want to address some feedback that we got from people in regards to casting choices for Back to the Future. So we put a call out both to Facebook and Twitter asking for how people would recast Back to the Future. And so we got a couple of calls from Facebook here, one from Bill 70. He said for Biff, he chose Sean William Scott. For Doc, he chose Christopher Walken, which I'm really surprised nobody went with, just given the general fandom of Christopher Walken there. He said, Walken is completely believable to be crazy enough to take plutonium from the Iranians. He would also be a believable friend to Marty, which I think is great.
He was just so obvious that we overlooked him.
I did think about him. I thought it would be too dry.
Yep, I think that could be that on the nose, but I think it's still really good at the same time. For Marty, he chose Justin Long, which I think is a really good pick that I didn't think of at all. And then for Jennifer, for the girlfriend, he chose Emma Stone. And then Matt Rogge, our good friend, said, recast The Rock as Marty so he could pull Biff from the car and give him the people's elbow. And I really feel that that's a pick from the heart. And then also we got from Allison Clotter, a Nerd Night Minnesota podcast presenter. So if you want to hit that up on mathishard.net, you can see her presentation on badass Arthurian women characters. She chose Russ Tamblyn as Marty and Billy Connolly as Doc Brown, which is really good.
I thought about that one too.
Yeah, I didn't think about that at all. all, but that's fantastic. And we got a ton of feedback. In fact, a ton of conversations today on Twitter. I bet I had probably 75 at replies from people with ideas. So first was Shanna Grattan, who's now married, whose maiden name I don't know. So I apologize, Shanna, but she can be found at Traveling Gypsy on Twitter. She said, as much as I'll get chided for this, I kind of see Zac Efron as Marty, which is in line with, was that you, Mark, I think?
That was me.
Yep. He said, kind of cocky, but also a little awkward. C-17 again. And then she said, knee-jerk for Doc is Brent Spiner from Independence Day.
I almost went with
that.
Nice.
Yeah, but I know that would just be too weird and based mainly on hair, which again, no fault there whatsoever. Mike Fotis, who hosts the This Is Yay podcast here on the Math Is Hard Network, which you should check out. I'm not plugging all these things. It just so happens that these are the people that replied. He said, not sure about Marty, but I'd cast Michael Richards as Doc. Yeah, it's the perfect comeback vehicle for him. And I think that's after I hadn't picked my Doc pick yet. And after he said that, I almost took that as mine because I think that is astounding. I think that's a great pick. Marcos Lopez Carlson, who is at Marcoscopic on Twitter, said Donald Glover as Marty and Crispin Glover as Doc Brown. And Andy, you said you accidentally misread that as Danny Glover as Marty, which I think is awesome. Just one day from retirement.
I was like, it's so out there. It's so out there. It just might work.
Hey, there you go. Danny Glover is Strickland. I like it. Kate O'Reilly, who is at Clever Kate on Twitter. She was on our Casting Choices podcast, said Mark Ruffalo as Doc and Daniel Radcliffe as Marty. Those are both fantastic.
Nice. Yeah, I thought about Daniel Radcliffe for Marty.
I like Mark Ruffalo. That's a really good one. I can see that his hair just going crazy already.
Yep. Our good friend Kyle Hoff, who's at Hoff Kyle, said Drake Bell as Marty, Ian McKellen as Doc, which I thought I was going to pick that, and then I went otherwise. Jennifer Lawrence as Lorraine, and my personal favorite, Peter Mayhew as Biff, who played Chewbacca in the original Star Wars trilogy. That's pretty awesome.
Get your damn Wookiee hands off her.
The guy can barely walk.
He has a lightsaber cane. Did you see that? Yes. His cane got confiscated. Yeah, that's a whole nother nerd thing. A frequent contributor, Art Alton, part of the Tipsy Pixels crew, who we've already thanked, who is Punsultant on Twitter, said my two picks for Doc Brown, Weird Al or Woody Harrelson, both of which are great. That's two Weird Al mentions in a row. We also mentioned him for Spies Like Us. And for Marty, he said Michael Cera or Jesse Eisenberg, both of which I think are really good.
Yeah, either one.
Same person.
Yep.
They'll do.
Funny. A little cloner. And then Clint Weathers, who's at Zen Rhino on Twitter, chimed in quite a bit. And we had actually a pretty good discussion about what we'd like Doc to be. And he said, Woody Harrelson would be good if he could come off somewhat sinister and somewhat less interested in Marty's safety. Show that he clearly has some sort of unsavory ulterior motive. Think of evil Doc as knowingly sending Marty off, assuming he'll die. Marty as Laika of time travel.
Ooh, I like
Laika
that one.
Was the Russian dog that they sent into space. So imagine that Einstein didn't go well, that he actually had two cars, and he's like, what happened to Einstein? He's like, nothing. When in fact you saw this happen or something like that. So I like that aspect. And that sort of informed my Bruce Campbell. Like, I think he could do that well, just that unhinged.
Like a completely detached from no emotions, just all in the name of science.
Right, exactly. Or just completely gone, like a little wacko.
Pseudoscience, we'll call it.
Yep, exactly. And then Bill Connell, who has contributed before, who's at WJCSTP, said Crispin Glover for Doc and Chloe Moretz Grace for Marty, both of which I think are amazing. I would love both of those picks. And then Stephanie, whose name I don't recall. Sure.
Bill Connell, can you let us know how you pronounce your handle? Or can you add a vowel in there? Always trips
Me it's out. Initials. It's William something Connell St. Paul. WJCSTP.
But how do you pronounce it?
It's like the prince symbol. I believe it's thin chicken gravy.
Oh.
That's how you pronounce it.
Nada. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah,
thank you. Exactly. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Anytime. And then Stephanie, who again, whose last name I don't remember off the top of my head, who we've hung out, which I feel bad about.
Best host ever.
I know. Sorry. I didn't DM her at bacon_Wednesday, which is a kick-ass username. Mm-hmm. She said, my concern from a male lead is that I don't know of any young actors today with enough charisma for the role, which we talked about in our first half. For reference, see those scenes with Eric Stoltz as Marty originally. We did have some feedback about Eric Stoltz being as Marty because he was originally cast in the role of Marty, and then it just ended up not playing well in the dailies, so they fired him and recast it with Michael J. Fox, so that's pretty interesting. She said, I think someone like Emma Stone could do it, though, with the right energy. I think that's a great pick as well. And then finally, our creative consultant here at Math is Hard, Brian Moen, who's at Emobi, said my picks are our stalwart Andy as Doc and Mark as Marty. And frankly, I can't fault either of those. So Marty! Thank you to everyone.
Marty! I still think Jared does it better, though.
So thank you to everyone for the wonderful feedback on that. We really appreciate that. That's always fun to receive and to hear and to have that discussion. So hit us up on mathishard.net or find us on Twitter or Facebook under username mathishardnet. So we want to do a quick overview of the first episode discussion of who we recast in the roles and who were the winning choices. So we'll go down our five major picks and then the one minor character pick that won as well. So in the role of Biff Tannen, we went with Andy's choice of Channing Tatum. That was almost everybody picked that, so that was a good one. In the role of George McFly, we went with Mark's choice of Jay Baruchel. In the role of Lorraine, we went with Mark's choice of Alice Eve. In the role of Doc Brown, we went with Lee's combined choice of Gary Oldman as the older Doc and Sam Rockwell as the younger Doc. And in the role of Marty, we went with my choice of Nicholas Holt. And then finally, for the minor character, which didn't count into our voting, but we just thought would be fun to share, we went with the choice of Bruno Mars for Goldie Wilson. So that was a great choice all around. So the big winner here, if you did the math along the way, is Mark. So Mark, you come back and you just sweep here. You just win.
Oh,
great job. Well done.
Thank you.
It was very well
done. Great teamwork. We just all gave 110%.
Can we also put a member of the podcast into the Hall of Fame for winning too many times?
Mark's getting there. Sheesh. So, Mark, tell us, what is the movie that you chose for us to discuss next?
Well, I've decided that we should really take this to a more serious note here. And we're going to be talking about the 1980 horror classic, The Shining.
Yay.
Yay, indeed.
Here's Remakers, Mark.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I think that is going to be some kind of amazing and quite, and really, honestly, a super kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. Not just some kind of amazing, an amazing kind of amazing.
That's a special type of amazing.
That's true. That's a very special type. Indeed.
It's our special purpose.
Choice, Mark. I like that. I'm excited about that. So we'll let you know at the end of the episode when that will air, and we'll go from there. So now let's go back to the Future. We're going to go back in time. Sorry, I'm contractually obligated to do that. I cut a deal with Huey. So now we're going into the plot and filmmaking and tech changes that we would make to the Back to the Future. So now we've recast the movie thus far. Now let's look at the nitty-gritty about this movie and what we might want to change and, you know, maybe what we would want to respect and leave the same in our remake of Back to the Future. So first and foremost, this is a time travel movie. And quite frankly, unlike many time travel movies that have come since then, and we'll talk a little bit about different time travel movies towards the end of this episode that we would recommend that you check out for maybe a well-rounded time travel movie-going experience, but this one really plays fast and loose with the space-time continuum in a really big, big way. Basically, the entire premise of the movie and its time travel goes against what most time travel movies have said to avoid, that being changing or interacting directly with the past, especially your own past. So I'm wondering, you know, some of that is just because, you know, I don't think filmmakers paid as close attention back then as they did nowadays, or I don't think movie-going audiences paid as close attention. Certainly haven't been as many time travel movies then as there were now, or as there are now. But could we play less loose with the space-time continuum in our remake of this movie? You know, or maybe make the bad results known more early on. So, I mean, what do you guys think about that? It seems like Jer, Mark, and I had a little bit to talk about that. Jer, do you want to start that off, or Mark?
Sure. I think that one of the things that Back to the Future does so well is that it takes one concept of time travel. And time travel movies tend to be kind of all over the board with their science and what they are willing to sort of play with and what they're willing to just, let's just leave that aside. It's a little too sciencey, or, you know, we're getting into Stephen Hawking territory or whatever. And so I think that one of the concept that they kind of cling to and do so well is this concept of linear time. Point A is 1955, and then point B is 1985, and there's a line between the two of them. That line is time. It's time line. And so by Marty going, and they actually even do this in Back to the Future 2 to sort of explain the science of Back to the Future to us. And so when Marty goes back in time to 1955, just by him being there, he skews that line to create a new line. And then all of the things that he does and the things that change just continue to create alternate realities, so to speak, or parallel timelines. And that's basically the extent of the science that Back to the Future is going to give us as far as time travel is concerned. And so the crux of the conflict of the story is Marty goes back in time and alters it to the point that would mean that he can't go back home because he wouldn't exist in that home if the line continued straight. Mm-hmm. And so they do that with the photograph showing his brothers and sisters disappearing as it becomes more and more inevitable that future isn't going to happen, which you could get into a whole rigmarole of, well, as soon as he got there, it wasn't going to happen. So
yeah, I like that they kind of give him like the countdown clock.
Right. Yeah. Right. Which is, you know, complete kind of is basically going against their own science. As soon as he changed it, he would, you know, he should have disappeared and not, you know, you've got a chance to fix it. But so this whole less loose I guess I don't know if you want to get more sciency with it. I think that the audiences would get that. I think that there's been so many time travel movies since Back to the Future, not that there hasn't been any before that, but I think that we've gotten a little bit more astute on understanding the whole broad stroke concepts of time travel, that I think that you could make it a little bit more science driven and we wouldn't get lost in big words and science speak. And I think that the audience would still figure out what's going on. And I think that could add a certain element to it. But again, the whole concept of Back to the Future is playing on really just one idea of time travel. And it's kind of the, like Kyle said, one of the more common ones. Don't screw up anything in the past or it's going to affect the future.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's a pretty base one. And that's really all they're going with. Everything else, they're not going to worry about how the DeLorean actually gets from point A to point B in the timeline or any of that stuff. We're just going to assume that that's a wormhole or something. Like, we don't need to explain that part. We're just going to go back in time and screw it up and then fix it.
Yeah, and I think that's a good choice to just not worry about most of the details. If we were worrying about all the details of a time travel movie, I think we would probably just end up not making the movie. It's from a storytelling standpoint, this is probably the best choice. I mean, it keeps things simple. It gives you a conflict and a premise that on which you can bite kind of decently and just forget about the rest of the details. Kind of like in a recent Stephen King novel about time travel. In preparation for the time traveling, one character says to another, "Oh, aren't you worried about paradoxes? You know, like if you kill your own grandfather." And then another character says, "Well, why would you want to do that?" And then they move on.
Yeah, I think there is some obviousness there. I would love to be a little bit more scientific as long as it doesn't take away from the lighthearted funness of the movie. And I don't know if those are mutually exclusive or not. If we can do that, I think that would be great. But if we can't tighten that up a little bit, then I don't think that's a way that we have to make the movie better. I think it would be interesting to try to do that. One thing that I thought of would be to have Marty affect the world of 1955 in a more peripheral way, as opposed to a more direct way. So have him be like a little bit more Iago-esque, you know, so have him convince someone that they should tell George that Lorraine is into him, or, you know, have it be less direct and have that be one aspect of it. Maybe it gets to that point where in spite of those efforts, Lorraine falls for him or is really into him, so that towards the end, we still end up with her in the car with him or something like that. But I would love for it to try to less direct from the get-go. You know, again, there's a thousand ways that you can do that, but I think that would be one interesting way of addressing or kind of reflecting that meta-awareness of time travel while still respecting the original plot and trying to manage that and deal with that in a way that is both entertaining and scientific. So yeah. What do you guys think about that?
The one that concerns me is that I would think that there's just not enough change that that Marty makes. It seems to me like everything that he does doesn't just affect one aspect of his future. You know, like he at the end of the movie, he ends up going back to 1985 and his family is all better and, you know, but nothing else has changed. And I would tend to think that the changes would just be more holistic.
Yeah. Why do they still live in the same dumpy house?
Yeah.
If he's a successful writer.
And why is the guy who wears a suit to the office still living at home?
Yeah. I wondered about that one. And they, I think they do a better job of addressing this in Back to the Future 2, but, you know, in our remake of the first film, you know, maybe the photo that Marty has could change more drastically, like the appearance of him and his siblings and the environment around them all changes. Be kind of like him trying to tweak his future so that he gets it back to correct, kind of like Homer Simpson time traveling.
Let's go back to the time when dinosaurs weren't just confined to zoos.
Okay, don't panic.
Remember the advice your father gave you on your wedding day.
If you ever travel back in time, don't step on anything, because even the tiniest change can alter the future in ways you can't imagine.
Fine. As long as I stand perfectly still and don't touch anything, I won't destroy the future.
Stupid bug! You go squish now!
Yes. Yeah, I think it would be cool, because one of the unfortunate things is that there's just basically one trip. He goes back and then he comes back. So we don't get a chance to kind of see a lot of things changing and how he's affecting them, except for one time. Like we had
sure,
mentioned.
I just want to clarify. Are you saying that he goes back to the future?
He goes back to the past, and then at the end of that, he goes back.
Okay, so there is a part though where he does go back to the future, right?
Right, at the end.
Okay. Could we have someone say that you're going to go back to the future? I think that would
I can
be really
say
effective.
He can go back to the future too.
Oh, interesting. That was terrible and awesome. Well played. I'm sorry for that distraction. I just wanted to put that out there. It's just
if we keep doing that, people are going to know that we've got this all scripted.
Yeah. Well, Kyle, you know, a throwaway joke is supposed to be just thrown away.
I'm too good for that, Mark, and not good enough for that.
Anyway.
Carry on, Jared. I apologize. Well,
what I was saying is, because he only goes back to the past and then back to the future one time in the movie.
See, I didn't even know I did that. It just was such an immediate response.
In the background of this whole little spiel, can we have the...
Yes.
Please?
Yes.
So we only get a chance to see how he has affected the future one time at the end. Like we had talked about in the pre-production, the Twin Pines Mall is now the Lone Pine Mall because he ran over a tree when he went back in time. Mm-hmm. His parents are changed, and his brother and sister and all, and his personal future is all changed. He gets the truck and Biff's a little kind of a wiener and all that kind of thing. So we only get to see all of those changes one time. And then we've got the picture to kind of be our time travel correctedness gauge or whatever. It would be cool to have some kind of other device to show how the things that he's doing along the way are affecting the future. Like maybe besides a picture in the DeLorean, when he goes back in the past, he's got like a whole scrapbook of things that are changing. And so when he does one thing that
suddenly he sees a picture of the zombie apocalypse, like something, you know,
that's really interesting, Jared.
Maybe something like that, where there's a whole myriad of things that he's realizing that everything he's doing is changing stuff. Like the whole Goldie Wilson thing, like maybe at one point the mayor is somebody else and he realizes that, oops, I screwed up when I went into the diner, and now he's actually going to become a mob boss or whatever. And now he's got to go back and like kind of fix that part or whatever. Or
and now it's raining donuts.
Just inadvertent stuff that really doesn't really care about, that, you know, now the old drugstore turned into the X-rated movie theater or whatever it was that it was in the past. And like to be able to show us how the things that he's doing are affecting the future along the way and not just at the end. And that's a great little twist at the end, that he came back and, you know, everything's better and like better than he left it. But I think it would be cool to show how, in the time travel sense, how things are being changed as he's there.
Yeah, and we could do that with any number of items that Marty has brought along, you know, similar to the picture. You know, maybe he brought his backpack from school, and he's got textbooks, he's got a yearbook, He's got his own notes and whatever. There's other stuff in his wallet, presumably.
Yeah, they use a newspaper in one of the sequels, newspaper headlines and pictures, and I think yeah, that's true. The second one.
Yep, that's right on, about the gambling thing, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, changed into kids crash into courthouse on their hoverboards.
Yep. So transitioning out of the time travel stuff a little bit, it's going to certainly inform everything. And that was really good, guys. Thank you. I like that. And Jerry, I apologize for interrupting that with my obvious play for, it's like in Tomb Raider when they say like, oh, wait a minute. She's a Tomb Raider, and it just drives me nuts whenever they have that. It's like no one was like, hey, Darth Vader, would you say that the Empire Strikes Back? You know, I mean, it's like, so it's just like everyone that just, it's like, yes, nice. It's like a pet peeve of mine when they very clearly note it. It's different when Black Sabbath names the band after a song. It's in a movie. It's a whole different thing. Anyways.
So it's more like when Roxette always says the name of their band in their songs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or when Missy Elliott claims that every song on an album is a Missy Elliott exclusive. Of course it is.
But when Craig Robinson looks at the camera and says, like a hot tub time machine, then everything is right.
Exactly. That's where we're all going to come. And actually, we are going to come out of that. That's funny. So one of the things that we struggled with is, so there's so much in this movie that is up for discussion. And we didn't want to make it sound like a gripe session because we love this movie. But frankly, the original premise of this movie is preposterous in so many ways. And one of the things that I noted was that for being one of the more beloved movies of all time, this movie is creepy as F-dash-dash-dash is what I wrote on the show notes here. Not the fudge word, the other one.
Fish?
Fish, that's exactly right. Yes, yeah. creepy as fish. Hey, fish are creepy, man. Dude, so creepy. Marty travels back in time, and in doing so, immediately gets seduced by his mother, right? So in this initial statement, it's already fairly weird. But then, in the piece de resistance of this seduction relationship, which he doesn't really, he kind of avoids it, but he doesn't encourage it, but he knows what the end result has to be. And so he crafts a scenario to get his mom to, in the hopes of paying attention to his eventual dad, to get her into a car to essentially pretend to take advantage of her and kind of like, I don't know, if you can kind of rape someone, this is as close as you can get. I mean, that's horrible.
It was light rape.
But like, that's the basic idea of it. And it's like, when you say that out loud, so again, we're talking about like that, the pitch thing that we talk about sometimes. Like, if you were to pitch that in a studio, they'd be like, what in the hell is wrong with you? It's like, it sounds terrible, but that's pretty much the relationship between Marty and his mom for this entire movie. Like, she digs him. He tries to avoid it. He tries to hook her up with his eventual dad. He pretends to rape her, but those goes awry. And then George ends up, you know, getting the girl in spite of Marty. I mean, it's just like crazy. So there's a lot of these kind of things. And Jerry, you had one as well about Marty and Doc. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Well, yeah, there's a YouTube craze that went through a few years ago where people would recut movie trailers to make the movie appear like something completely different than it actually was, simply by changing the soundtrack behind it and cutting it up a little differently. And there was one about Back to the Future that basically turned it into a love story between Doc and Marty. And what really is their relationship? How does a sort of a slacker high school kid that wants to be in a band befriend a crazy old scientist that lives by himself and invents weird things?
Like, who lives by himself, like next to a fast food restaurant.
That's true. Like, where did that come from, and why do we not care about it?
I'm willing to defend the movie on this one, so, especially in the 1985 that we see at the beginning of the film. You know, Marty doesn't like his family. You know, he doesn't respect his parents. He doesn't respect his siblings. There are only two people that he really wants to be with, and that's his girlfriend and Doc. And you know, well, Doc having the biggest guitar amp in the world. I guess I can see that, but
that probably helps.
That'd get me, yeah, totally.
Yeah, it was, I see Marty as a kid who really just kind of wants a distraction. He doesn't like being at school. He doesn't like being at home. So he goes to Doc's place and just experiences all the interesting stuff.
Well, and in all honesty, to flip it over on myself, if looking at me as a kid, like if I had the ability to know and be friends with a crazy scientist that invented stuff all the day or all the time, I'd do it. I'd hang out with him all the time.
Totally.
Making little Goldberg devices to open cans of dog food. Like, that'd be pretty awesome to be kind of involved in that in a just sit around and watch it while I play my guitar or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Maybe like it's like an internship, an unpaid high school internship with a creepy old guy. just a thought.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
You could write that up on Career Day as, you know, you're shadowing a mad scientist. And why not?
Totally. And you could just, you know, plug in that JVC tape recorder and you know, play that back come Science Fair Day. And you know, if Marty doesn't win with that, well, I don't know what's right with the world then, but that's a whole different story.
He should probably wear the chandelier truth detector thing that he had back in the 50s.
Oh, yeah. Good call. Any other weirdnesses that you guys want to touch on before we move along into more time travel-y stuff that Mark was going to talk about?
Well, Kyle, getting back to your point about the whole Oedipus thing, the creepiness of that like hit me at a really weird time. You know, watching the movie for the first time in the theater, I didn't really think much of it. But years later, when it came out on video, and I was watching it with my mom, and I got to that scene where they, you know, park the car and Marty asks Lorraine if she wants to park. And I never quite understood what that meant. I was like, and she's like, well, it's not like I've never parked before. And I asked my mom, like, what are they talking about? And she goes, well, they're going to stop and make out. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, that hit me years later at how creepy that was.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not that they don't acknowledge the weirdness of it. I mean, from the moment that he wakes up in that dream state after getting hit by her dad, like everything is uncomfortable for him, but just the premises that they bring up in the hopeful resolution of this, it's just weird. Just super yes. duper creepy weird.
Agreed.
And if this is like one of the more beloved movies of all time. I mean, like I can't think of anybody that speaks ill of Back to the Future. I mean, some people like it more than others, but everyone's like, yeah, that's like that's a good 1980s movie. And it's like, would you lay that out? That's weird, man. Yeah.
It is one of my favorite trilogies.
Mm-hmm. It is great. Mm-hmm.
So Mark, you had some other kind of weirdnesses in general, especially on the reality of time travel and sort of the mechanisms around it and the logistics of it. So do you want to talk on a few things about that or touch on a few things about that?
Yeah, I mean, I also don't want this to be a gripe session because I know I can get tied up in the details of the science and the practicality in films, but still, there are a lot of things to talk about in that vein. And so I came up with a list of alternative ways that this movie could end. For instance, end of the movie, Marty finally makes it back to 1985. In 1955, there's a trail of fire leading right up to the movie theater. And then back in 1985, Marty has died in the car crash.
Because Just remember, Mark, that DeLorean is made of stainless steel.
So it will be a rust-free death.
And yes, all stainless steel, including the steering column. I won't get into that. But seriously, 88 miles per hour, he drives right into a building.
And then backs out and drives away.
Yeah, and then drives away from it. And then runs to the mall after that.
He did get a stitch in his side running that distance. Remember that?
This is true. I remember that.
Okay, alternative ending number two. Beginning of the movie, Marty travels back in time to 1955 and runs into the barn, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Through a tree.
Through a tree, into the barn.
Scarecrow.
And
Scarecrow.
When he hits the barn, then the casing of the plutonium cracks and he dies in an explosion.
As well as everybody on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And several states.
That'll change the future.
My Hill Valley.
So
now you're just Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's macabre in the best way. I love that.
You're not going back to the future.
Nope.
Alternative ending number three. Beginning of the movie, Marty travels back in time to 1955. Instead of running into a scarecrow, he materializes directly inside of it. And I don't know what happens, but it doesn't end well.
Something about the laws of physics. Really
his DNA gets mixed up with the DNA of the scarecrow, and he becomes like a scarecrow man.
And he travels to the Batman universe and becomes a supervillain there.
Ooh, nice. He's Killian Murphy. I like it.
Somehow Jeff Goldblum is involved.
he always is. That wily Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. In a similar vein, I'd like to pose this one as a question, and maybe Star Trek nerds can help me out, but why isn't it a problem that anytime a time traveler materializes in a different time, they always appear inside of some sort of matter? Most of the time would just be gaseous matter, though, aka air. Why is that not a problem? Help me, please.
Like they should inhabit air instead of individual space kind of thing? Or they just happen to land in the right place?
Like, where does the air that was right there go
exactly
when they appear?
Well, does it just get pushed out of the way? Like, as if you just jumped into a lake, you know? I don't know.
It depends on how you're materializing, like, which is a whole other question about time travel. Like, between 1985 and 1955, is the DeLorean outside of time? Where does it go? Or is it like the time machine from H.G. Wells, where time just sort of happens around it?
Yeah, we don't know.
And if so, at some point in 30 years, you'd think there'd be something in that space that would inhabit that space, whether it's a person, a dog, a tree, whatever, a hay bale. So
it would just like instantly turn into this puff of red mist, and then it's gone.
They give it away a little bit in when they have Einstein travel, when the dog takes the first test run. Like, Einstein reappears at the moment that he started. It's not like when he went to 88 miles per hour. He ended up, like, he started back when he returned a minute later at the exact point at which the car started. Not when it started time traveling, just where it started.
So I mean, that's the beginning of the flame trails.
I guess, but even that...
Right when it hit 88 miles per hour, but not
no,
when
it, I feel like it was it, right when they make it started appear, from.
Because remember, they have to like jump out of the way, and they were standing. It disappeared right at their feet, because the flame trails go between each of their legs. And they're standing there talking about it, and then Doc Brown's got to shove them out of the way real quick, because it reappears right at that same point, inexplicably doing a handbrake turn onto the wet parking lot. Why, and a separate note, why are all the streets control and parking lots so uniformly damp?
It's very humid in Hill Valley.
I guess. But yeah. It has never rained. It's just always wet. I don't get that.
It's because of the Libyans, Andy. It's always the Libyans.
It's the damn Libyans.
Yep, every time.
We'd like to apologize to the entire nation of Libya.
Yeah, sorry, Libya.
Sorry, Libya. You guys you're good doing folk. Pretty well.
Hang in there. Mark, anything else for that? Or do you feel like I think it's a good encapsulation. I just don't want to cut you short.
No, I think I'm good. I'd just be a lot happier with the science if Einstein and Rosen had written the movie.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah, Einstein, right, the physicist, not the dog.
I like the dog better, but I get you. So, Jer, you came up with a couple ideas for alternate settings and times for this remake that I thought were really interesting. Do you want to touch on both of those real quick?
Sure. When we started the conversation of recasting this movie, the first and most obvious question for me, especially as I started trying to think of who would play things, is when would we set the movie? Is this a reboot of Back to the Future, or are we genuinely doing a complete recasting of the movie so that it starts in 1985, it goes back to 1955, and those are the dates and those are the times? Or is it a high school kid in 2013 goes back 30 years to 1983, meets his parents in high school, and goes back? Because that's a very different movie. Then it's Hot Tub Time Machine, because you're going back and it's all crazy, hilarious 80s things instead of the 1950s. And so there's two basic options right there. Do we just do it like it was and make it essentially a period piece on both sides? So it's an 80s movie and a 50s movie that we are filming in 2013. Or we film it in today and then they go back in time to the early 80s. Or... And this is the one I like. We do it a little differently. It starts in 2013, high school kid in 2013, and his buddy, chum, crazy scientist friend invents a time machine out of what I presume is probably a very economical Prius or something. That wouldn't actually be true because they can't get it to 88 miles an hour. And he goes back in time, not one generation to the 80s, but two generations back to the 50s. So now it's still a Back to the Future movie that we get back to the 50s, and he has to go meet his grandparents, who are now high school kids, and his grandma hits on him. Huh?
Is it like a degrees of separation thing makes it slightly less creepy? Is that the hope?
I think it probably makes it more creepy, but
yeah, you're right.
It's still the 50s, and I think that, I mean, the biggest problem I would have with doing it now, 2013 to 1983, is the culture and the world and the people of 1983, from a technological standpoint, are a little bit more sophisticated than people in 1950s. In 1955, you just had TVs, and so his joke about, we have two TVs, you must be rich, and all of that kind of thing, and hiding the car and all that. It's from 85 to 55, from a technology standpoint in the world, it was drastically different. And granted, yes, it's different from 85 to 2015, or 83 to 2013, or whatever, but if you went back in time and you had a DeLorean or whatever car we would have now and went back, it wouldn't seem quite so out of place. And having the putting the Walkman on the guy and convincing him that he's Darth Vader from Planet Vulcan, like that joke doesn't make any sense in 1983, because kids in 1983 would have seen, you know, Star Trek and Star Wars, presumably. And so the whole technological vibe of it would have to be changed. So that's why I would submit that it would make more sense to either set it at the time that it was originally shot, or go back two generations, back to 55.
I like both of those options a lot. I think they can present interesting opportunities in both ways. I love the idea of going back to the 80s, just because I think, like, again, from the Joe Hollywood perspective, I think the nostalgia aspect of that would be hugely beneficial from a box office perspective. I think people would really dig that. I think you could even do both, you know, like maybe that could be the second sequel, you know, something like that. So instead of going to the future, it's going farther back in the past or something like that. So, I mean, it opens up a different type of reboot option, or maybe both. Maybe you do, you know, going back to the 80s, and then it turns out that they weren't, that their grandparents had never met, so then you bounce back to 55, you know what I mean, or something like that, where, you know, you could come up with lots of different options with that.
The other cool option about doing what you just said, going back twice, and maybe you go back all the way, like maybe Doc Brown said, I remember when I invented the flux capacitor, and I was nine, and I was getting ready for a science fair. So then he has to go back two generations and he screws something up. And then he bops back to the 80s and realizes that it's still screwed up or whatever, or has to fix something else. And then, so he's got Doc Brown as a kid, and then he's got Doc Brown as a, you know, 40 something or 30 something or whatever it is. And then old Doc Brown. Like, I like that.
In Midnight in Paris, the Woody Allen film, they do a double time travel.
Yeah.
It's a very different sort of movie, but, yeah, going back twice in that one works really, really well for me. But I'm also an art history nerd, so.
Yeah, I also love that they almost make no explicit mention of it. I mean, it's very clear that that's what's happening, but it's not clear immediately. Like, you can't, it's like, is this like cosplay of F. Scott Fitzgerald? Like, what's going on here? But yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, this would have to be more explicit, but I do like how they did that in Midnight in Paris. I think that's a great parallel. All right, so good discussion there. And then lastly, before we move on to our final segment, Lee, you had some thoughts about what we could do in terms of the filmmaking side of things, especially with regards to the special effects, given that it's been almost 30 years since this was made. Certainly, we've come a long ways in terms of special effects technology. Do you want to touch on that briefly?
Yeah, I think that a studio would expect a reboot of this type to really amp up the special effects and, you know, really go over the top with CG. Me personally, I like that the special effects in the movies aren't real heavy handed. I mean, they're there when they need to be, but they're not overly done. And I would want that in a remake. I would just maybe want them cleaned up a little bit, since we have better technology now. And yeah, I think we touched on something similar to this in our Ghostbusters episode. You know, the special effects are fine. Just clean them up a little bit. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts on that, but I just don't like it when special effects are there just for the sake of, oh, look what we can do. You know,
the biggest one that I could think of is the disappearing hand. Like when he supposedly holds his hand up in front of his face and you can see it fading in and out.
Very much a process shot. You can see it.
Yeah. I did remember finally, what the sound was that I had hinted at earlier that I completely forgot about. Whenever the DeLorean is about to go into time travel mode, it sounds just like the land speeder entering Mos Eisley.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Good call. It's not sounding like it is the exact same sound.
Funny. I'll have to listen for that next time.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's good. Push those glasses up. That's well deserved. One thing I would like is this very much felt, and it's kind of adorable in some ways, but I would like for it to maybe be slightly less adorable in this regard, would be feel like less of a backlot movie. Like this very much felt like a backlot set each time, you know, like it really felt like it was just the set that you were in, and the, you know, I would love for the scope of it to grow so you find a little bit more about Hill Valley. Yeah. And you really, Hill Valley, right? Is
that Hill Valley? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
They use that, the town square a lot, you know?
Yes. Yeah, it's pretty much the setting for everything.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to expand upon that a little bit. I mean, they hit different settings, but that one in particular, I would love to see more of the heart of the city. So maybe do a establishing shot that's a little bit more of that, a little bit more of 1955. And I think you can get a greater mood of the time and place just in one kind of swooping shot of that nature, whether it be 1983, 1955. So you don't have to explain as much. You can see things visually. And then, already having been there, you can then build on that with dialogue or with interactions or things like that. So that would be my kind of addition as far as technology, would be a digital set that's much greater in scope. It doesn't have to be like, I don't want 1950 Hill Valley to be like huge, because it's not. I mean, they didn't have that much developed, but I would like for it to be just a little bit richer, a little bit more involved.
You really do kind of feel like Hill Valley could be a town of 2,000 people or 20,000
yeah. mm-hmm.
people. Yeah, like you really don't have a scope for how big the town is. And at times it feels like a tiny little podunk town, and at times it feels like this is a, you know, a fairly booming metropolis. It's not, you know, LA or anything, but a pretty substantial little town, and you just never quite get a grasp of how big it is. It's obviously big enough to have suburbs and different neighborhoods and things with especially in Back to the Future 2, when he's talking about where he ended up living in his adult life, and how he thought it was really swank, and it turns out it's sort of the ghetto. And so it would be, yeah, like you said, it'd be nice to sort of get a better grasp of the scope of the town and see a little bit more of it.
I don't think that's that vagueness hurts the original film, but I think it could be used to pretty good effect in our remake.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was hoping for. Exactly.
Agreed.
One other thing that I would think of is imagine if, let's say Marty has to travel back in time. Imagine if Doc can't go back with him for some reason, if they had to be separated in time at some point, where Marty has to leave clues for him in the future or something like that. You know, I mean, there's been a few movies that have done that. That might be an interesting way to transition between the two, have it kind of like, you know, in the original, they show, what is it, Lyon Estates, I think, L-Y-O-N Estates. And then it's, you know, it's the gates, but it's not any of the houses. So imagine a scene where it transitions, then it fades between the 1950s version and the 80s version, where Doc Brown is there visiting his home, having received a clue or something. You know, I mean, it's like that could be something where you could bridge the gap between those environments and those times in a way that would be pretty visually interesting.
And that would be another clever way to show how Marty, like we were talking about earlier, how Marty is affecting the future. And so every time you cut back to Doc and present time, you see something a little bit different than it was before, and just kind of how you're realizing from a ancillary standpoint how he's affecting the world around him just by being there, even though it's not sort of the main plot point of his parents. There's other things changing too,
and just a nice device for storytelling and letting you know what the other character is doing while you can't see it.
Yep, absolutely. I think the special effects would be especially pertinent in, were we to remake Back to the Future 2, I think so much of that would be benefited in a huge way from a bump in technology. So it's a little bit less in this first one, but I think for those going forward, it would be much more helpful.
Speaking of Back to the Future 2, we're 2 years away from flying cars.
Yeah, really? Officially? That's true. 2015. Wow. Nice. Okay, so before we wrap things up here, we have one more quick segment that we are calling Gonna Go Back in Time in honor of the great, His Honorable Huey Lewis. We just wanted to touch on some, I don't think he's a judge, I'm just going to give him that. We just want to touch on some of our favorite time travel movies. We're each going to pick one time travel movie to mention, just give a brief summary about and why we like it. So let's go in reverse alphabetical order here, if that's cool with you guys. So Mark, do you want to touch on your time travel movie/show pick and why you recommend it?
Absolutely. My pick for a time travel movie is is actually part of a series. It's a Futurama movie. I believe it was their first movie called Bender's Big Score. And it turns out that that Fry has a bit of code tattooed on his ass. And Bender can read it out loud. And then and it opens up a wormhole. So it does everything. Wormhole. This movie does everything well, and maybe even better that the series does. And those of us who are fans of Futurama know that it's cheeky and it's silly and it's irreverent, but it's also sincere and it's incredibly clever. And this film does all of those very, very well.
Nice. Good deal. I will. I have not seen that, I'm afraid. I've seen a few episodes of Futurama, but not nearly as much as I should have, especially having been a Simpsons fan. So I'm a little ashamed of that.
Anybody that wants to get into Futurama, actually, Bender's Big Score is a really good place to start.
All right. It's a deal. What's on? I will check that out. Lee, how about you? What is your time travel recommendation?
Mine is The Butterfly Effect. That came out in 2002, I think, starring Ashton Kutcher. And it's essentially about a kid who's having these weird seizures, and a psychiatrist tells him to keep a journal, tell him to write down everything that happens so he can kind of pinpoint these moments when he blacks out. And he discovers from this that when he goes back and reads those entries, he's able to briefly travel back in time to that moment and change something that went wrong. And the message of the movie is that if you could go back in time and change something that you did wrong, inevitably you will screw something else up. And that's exactly what happens to him throughout the whole movie. He tries to fix one thing, something else gets wrecked. And he fixes that, something else gets wrecked in his life. And this is one of those movies where on the DVD release, I actually like the director's cut better than the theatrical version, because I think the ending on the director's cut is a little bit truer. It's darker, but it's definitely truer. And it's, in my opinion, Ashton Kutcher's best performance. I'm not a big fan of his, but this is a terrific movie of his.
I think it might be one of his only films that actually kind of challenges his abilities.
Absolutely.
And he does pretty well.
Yep. So, yep. Butterfly Effect. See it.
Right on. Good pick. So my time travel pick is a movie that was kind of under the radar, but it's really interesting. It's from 2004. It's called Primer. I think it could be pronounced Primer. I'm not entirely sure which. It's P-R-I-M-E-R.
I think it's Primer,
but I've heard both, yeah. So I'm just covering my, you know what. So it was directed by Shane Carruth, who recently had a new movie out called Upstream Color that had quite a bit of accolades. So it was made in 2004. For a grand total of about $7,000, the majority of which was spent on film stock. So, I mean, this is unbelievably low budget, and the film does not reflect that. It is an amazingly made movie, and it is a really, really tight, interesting look at time travel. So these two guys invent something that they don't quite know the scope of what it does. I think they have a certain hope, and then it ends up being that much greater than what the result that they thought it would be was. And it ends up being a much deeper study on the ethics of time travel, like whether you should do that, what the ramifications are. It's a little bit less direct than The Butterfly Effect, but it's kind of that same people in the same place at the same time sort of thing. And just, you know, what good and what especially evil can come of that ability. It's not terribly fast moving, but I wouldn't call it plotting. It's just very deliberate. It feels like an independent film in that way, but it is just riveting at the same time. So I highly recommend it. It's really, really interesting. And the angle that they take on it is one that not a lot of movies have taken about that. So I would definitely recommend it. So Primer, P-R-I-M-E-R.
If you hadn't picked that one, I was going to pick that one.
Yeah, and it's awesome movie. I mean, I want to rewatch it. I've seen it twice, and I want to rewatch it again soon. So
what I love about it is that they don't shy away from science.
Yes.
If they're going to talk over our heads, they're going to talk over our heads, and they don't care. And they do talk over our head. Like I had to watch it twice just to figure out what the heck they were talking about in some of the scenes, because it's very much talking about the science of it, and like you said, the ethics of it too, but really, as they're inventing this thing, they're talking about concepts and quantum physics and things, and they're not dumbing it down at all. And
yeah,
and I like that about it. It's an excellently made movie.
Yeah, it's not deliberate or obvious, both of which can be really helpful in a time travel movie. And this, you really have to pay attention and really have to think and focus. So it's not an easy watch, but it's one that I definitely recommend. Jer, how about you? What was your choice of time travel property?
Well, very similar to Primer in that it's a very intellectual, highbrow movie with a very low budget. I went with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Very similar, yes.
Very highbrow.
I don't know. There's just something completely ridiculously fun about it. I love that it's not only a time travel device, it's a time and space travel device that it can go to any moment and any place in time. Obviously it's all going to be centered around, you know, famous events, famous people, and it's ridiculous and completely throwaway, and it's just hilarious, and Abraham Lincoln's in it. So my favorite scene is the one at the end, towards the end, when all of the famous people from history are in the mall, and Genghis Khan is in the sporting goods store, and Joan of Arc is doing jazzercise, and Abraham Lincoln's getting his portrait taken at the portrait studio. It's just so perfect and stupid and awesome, and I've heard they're making another one.
Oh wow. Yep.
Oh yep. Gosh.
I'm terrified and intrigued.
Yep. That's mine.
All right, Andy, end us up here. I'm going to add one more at the end, but what is your pick for time travel movies? Well,
since my original pick was vetoed and this one was offered up, this one is actually a much better choice than my original. So the one that I'm going to officially say is Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, where Captain Kirk and crew valiantly time travel by whipping themselves around the sun and going back to 1986 or 7 San Francisco to find some blue whales that somehow are going to save the world.
Yar,
there be whales. And it's I think the campiest and cheesiest and probably dumbest of the Star Trek movies, but at the same time it's kind of fun. And
I would liken it to the Rocky series. Rocky IV and Star Trek IV were probably the dopiest of them, but also my favorites.
That's probably a good way to put it. Yeah. I mean, Scotty giving that guy the formula for transparent aluminum and, you know, how do you know he didn't invent the stuff? That kind of thing. I mean, yeah, it's pretty fun. Yeah.
Well, they do the same thing in the J.J. Abrams reboot. Like he explains to himself basically that he invented time travel or whatever. Yeah. Or Spock Prime.
Well, I think
Spock
when they're selling Captain Kirk's glasses for money, like, because they're, you know, these old antiques or whatever it is or something like that, and then they're talking about, well, you're going to give them to me again anyway, so it's you know, it's not my loss, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's meta in a good way. Yeah,
yeah, it's a little tongue in cheek and things like that, but yeah. So Star Trek IV. Voyage Home.
Good pick. So the one that I'm going to add here is sort of an honorary pick on behalf of all of us, and you're going to have to trust me with this one, but you'll see why in a moment. So we have referenced it thus far, but I think the ultimate time travel property would have to be from the Treehouse of Horror number 5 from The Simpsons. The segment was called Time and Punishment. I'll just read kind of a start of the description here. While trying to fix a broken toaster, Homer accidentally turns it into a time machine. It transports him to prehistoric times, where he realizes they must be careful because if he affects anything in the past, it could change the future. After swatting a mosquito, he returns to the present to find a dystopia where Ned Flanders is now the dictator of the world, and it just gets weirder and better from there. And that whole Treehouse of Horror number 5, the first best part one of it is the Shining episode, so the mockery or the homage to The Shining, which we're going to be discussing next, and then Nightmare Cafeteria featuring Uderbotten, the food made of the German student Uder. So, I mean, just as a whole...
Basically a play on
Delicatessen,
Charlton Heston's
Soylent Green. Yep. So as a whole episode, it is one of the better 23 minutes of television you can ever watch, but the Time and Punishment one, it's just like the phrase of Abraham Simpson saying, if you ever travel back in time, don't touch anything. That could just oversee this entire two episode swing of Remaker's Mark. So I think that's
which was his advice on Homer's wedding night.
Exactly. That's the best part.
I forgot about that. Oh, that's great.
Don't forget what your father said on your wedding night. If you ever go back in time.
Don't touch anything. Yep. And it features one of my favorite lines of all time, which is, stupid bug, you go squish now. just watch it. It's amazingly good. So, all right. Well, that wraps it up, gentlemen. Thank you. This is the second half of our discussion of Back to the Future. If you would like to find out information about the movies and actors or actresses discussed in this podcast, you can check us out at mathishard.net. And you can also find out more information about Remakers Mark or the other podcasts and blogs on the Math is Hard Network. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook on username mathishardnet at both properties. The next episode will be released on September 9th, where we will be discussing the first part of The Shining. So, gentlemen, as always, thanks for your time and your picks. This is a highlight of my existence as a person as a whole, which is pretty awesome. So,
as a wormhole. You know,
take that home with you. No wormholes. Shut your mouth. So thank you for your time. And as always, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.